And now, Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks.
What's up, everybody? DJ Bucky here, Move the Sticks. And Buck, normally, you know, we've got a lot of good football to talk about. But we've had pretty compelling basketball that's taking place lately. And we're not going to go there. We're not going to get any basketball analysis. We'll spare you that. But off the court, I think, I mean, don't we have to, talk about these burner accounts, don't we?
We have to talk about it. It's a major story. You're talking about a guy who is the president of an organization, Brian Colangelo, president of the Philadelphia 76ers, is currently being investigated by his own squad for having multiple burner accounts where he not only did maybe may have been accused of disclosing personal information, but also took shots at his players. This is unprecedented. It's unprecedented because we all have been around NFL execs and scouts who may follow players and prospects to see what they're doing, but never – never, in my estimation, have I heard of a guy taking shots at his own team. That is crazy.
Oh, it is. It's the craziest story, man. And trust me, we have plenty of football, so stay with us here. We're going to get to talking a little bit about the Brandon Marshall news. We're going to talk about playing for Bill Belichick. We're going to talk about the division champions from last year, whether or not they got better or worse, as well as our favorite role players in the NFL. But we had to start here, Buck. And I think some people think, oh, how could you have a burner account? Like there's something crazy. No. Every scout and probably 90% of the executives in the NFL have Twitter accounts that some of them are public. I would say the majority of them are private. They don't have their real name in there, and they're using it to follow their own players to see what they're up to, or they're following, you know, prospects coming up. They're following information guys, reporters to get their information. It's basically like their modern day newspaper. It's just how they get their information. But that's normal. To have one of those accounts and to tweet from it, that's not normal. And to then use that account, tweet from it, and attack your own players, attack the former general manager, I mean, it makes my head explode how crazy this thing is.
Yeah, it's kind of beyond belief. And it just really speaks to what we always warn young people with. You have to be social media responsible. You have to understand exactly what you're doing. You can't put yourself at risk. This guy's going to lose probably one of the marquee jobs. You think about the talent that they have in Philadelphia, what may be coming down the road with LeBron James possibly coming. You're talking about a plum job that he may give away because of something that he decided to do on Twitter. It's crazy, but it's the way that we're going. We've seen other things. We've seen other people be held responsible for their tweets, but it is unbelievable that an executive, a high-ranking executive, would have a burner account and take pot shots at his own players and put his own job at risk.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's crazy to me when you look at it in this. And look, this has not been proven without a shadow of a doubt. It sure looks like he was in charge of those five accounts. We'll see. I guess the 76ers announced they're going to do their own investigation. They'll get to the bottom of it and figure it out. But man, Buck, to me, I think this goes to one of the most, maybe one of the most underrated aspects of being in charge of a team. And I would put that in terms of being a head coach, being a general manager across all sports, and I would even label it as being a star player. Buck, you've got to have thick skin, man. I think back just personally when we first started on social media and when you get critiqued and you get people coming at you, you call them trolls, whatever you want to call them. And I remember it used to bother me, you know, looking at those. And then I went through a stretch where it was like, okay, I'm not even going to read anything. I'm not going to read any of the replies. I'm not going to read any of the comments. I went through kind of that phase. It's almost like a grieving phase. And then finally you get to the point where you're like, I really don't even care. I kind of laugh at them when they throw this criticism out there. Man, you got to have thick skin.
Yeah, you have to be able to navigate the critics. And I think that's the one thing. And I think what's interesting as we continue to evolve in this social media age, yeah, you have to be able to deal with the onslaught of criticism that may come when you have a reply or you put your opinion out there. I do believe it's something that you learn to handle. And I think for moving it off of the burner accounts, but even in looking at players and prospects, how do they handle the critiques? I mean, years ago when we were having Nike camps, we had young players who would worry about the avalanche of criticism that would come from the Twitterverse if they didn't perform well at a camp or at a big event where everyone could see. And so you have to help your players understand how to navigate the social media storm, and hopefully they're able to take the critiques from those guys who really don't matter, particularly the eggshells, the guys who have the egg that don't even have their face up there. That's the stuff that drives me crazy. If you're going to have an opinion, you want to say something, you're going to take a shot, at least have a real avatar so I can weigh back in.
Yeah, no, look, you got to have a little bit of thick skin here. It's just part of, I think it's just part of maturing and growing up. And we're actually going to play off this a little bit, I believe, on tomorrow's podcast so we
Tomorrow's
can
pod.
confirm this. I got this idea. Are we good for this tomorrow,
Yeah,
Sully?
we'll do it tomorrow. We were supposed to do it today, but had a lot of technical difficulties this morning. We've been putting out fires, so we'll do truth or troll tomorrow for sure, 100%.
Yeah,
I already got a couple
this
good
idea
ones.
came. This idea, Bucky, came from me listening to the Entree Leadership, I should say, podcast, which is one of my favorite podcasts. And I had a guest on there who wrote a book called Originals by Adam Grant, who I'm reading. It's a phenomenal book. But he was on there and he mentioned how you got to be able to handle criticism. And a lot of times, even if it's not crafted in a kind way, there could be some little truth nuggets in there, whatever. So you try and learn from those critiques as well. So I challenge Sully to go back through and look through some of our videos. Some of the different things, content pieces we've put out there. Find some of these comments, and then we're going to play a game called Truth or Troll. I mean, is there some truth in there, or is this just flat out being a troll?
Oh, okay, that's gonna be fun. It's gonna be a lot of fun.
Yeah, so that's something to look forward to on our next podcast, though. We do have some news, recent news here. Brandon Marshall signing with the Seahawks. What is it? Big news? No news? Small? What is this?
I mean, I think it's compelling news, and it's compelling only because it's Brandon Marshall, a guy who's been a what, 4 or 5 time Pro Bowl, a guy who has had a bunch of success on a bunch of different teams. He goes over to the Seattle Seahawks. Last time we saw Brandon Marshall, he was coming off a disappointing year where he was injured, missed the last 11 games. The season before that, he had less than 1,000 yards, had another injury. What are the Seattle Seahawks exactly getting? Well, they're getting a big body receiver, a guy who is no longer a number one, probably not even a number two. But you have to think about this in kind of like a big picture thing. They lose Jimmy Graham. They still need someone who can maybe make some big plays down in the red zone. Maybe, best case scenario, Brandon Marshall is able to replace some of the production that Jimmy Graham gave them inside the 20. Put 5, 6, 7 touchdowns on the board, do some things as a big body possession receiver to help alleviate some of the pressure on Doug Baldwin and some of the other guys in the passing game.
It's funny you say that because I think we kind of share a brain after doing this together for so long now. Because I wrote down Jimmy Graham and I wrote down the number 7. You know, that forget about having these productive 100-yard games, you know, 10 catch games. No, put that all aside. This about Brandon Marshall is being able to replace some red zone production, and you put that goal at 7. Can he get you 7 touchdowns down there in the red zone where Russell can just put the ball up in the air? He can play above the rim. I don't care how old you are. And I think this even goes back to Dez Bryant, who we've talked about a bunch, and what his value is. Look, size doesn't age, Buck. I mean, that size and physicality and catch radius is still there. Maybe you can't get away from people on third down in the middle of the field, but you get down there in the red zone and use that big body, play above the rim. I think that's where you still have a little bit of value there with Brandon Marshall as well as a guy like Dez Bryant.
Absolutely. And I think this really sets the market for what Dez Bryant and some of the other guys, Eric Decker, Jeremy Maclin, what these guys can expect on the market. Brandon Marshall can make up to $2 million per. And so now when you look back at it and what we've heard that Dez Bryant was offered from the Baltimore Ravens, he probably should have taken that deal when it was on there, when it was $7 million per. We'll see if he's able to surpass what Brandon Marshall got, but right now his available teams, the pool is shrinking, so he needs to get signed quickly so he can get the best of what's left in the money.
All right, and probably the most shocking news story of the week. Maybe save that Philadelphia Philly 76ers story we were talking about with the burner accounts. Man, this just floored me, Buck, because I was shocked to learn that somebody that's played for the Patriots said it wasn't the most fun environment. That was shocking news to me. I'm sure you were blown away as well.
I was blown away. Cassius Marsh letting it be known that he didn't have a lot of fun playing with the New England Patriots. And I think it comes down to this, like, when you're playing for a coach that is no nonsense or old school or kind of a disciplinarian who doesn't necessarily have a lot of fun with his team, it comes down to winning. Because you're willing to sacrifice everything if you can be the ultimate winner. If you can win the championship, if you can get the ring, you don't mind doing those things, making the sacrifices, being more of a team guy than a we guy or a me guy. You don't mind necessarily taking lower pay. But when you're not winning, and winning has been known to cure all. Not winning, no fun, low pay, not a lot of positives. And so in that environment, what we're seeing, the New England Patriots just lost the Super Bowl, and even though Cassius Marsh was gone and available, not there, you're seeing more and more people kind of have this backlash against Bill Belichick and what has been going on in New England. I just think people are tired of not necessarily being able to enjoy their experience. And I know he's ultimately the coach. His job is to make it where they're in the best position to win. But, man, when you don't have fun at the job and you don't win, it is hard to go and do some of the grind that he may ask you to do.
Yeah, it's interesting to me, though, especially with Cassius Marsh, knowing where he came from with Pete Carroll spending that time there, and now he's in San Francisco. But you don't get any more polar opposite than Pete Carroll and Bill Belichick. Now, both guys have been successful. Bill Belichick, arguably the greatest coach in NFL history. Pete Carroll has established himself as, you know, a top-tier coach here for a long period of time. But just in the last week, I think we've had, and I think it was from Damashek's podcast, right, where Cliff Averill talked about how the team had kind of turned on Pete Carroll a little bit after the interception there in the Super Bowl against Bill Belichick and the Patriots. It cost him a Super Bowl. So on one hand, we've got a player that's saying, you know, it's no fun. It's rigid. I don't want anything to do with it. I was miserable there in New England. And then you've got Cliff Averill, when I think Pete Carroll, we would all acknowledge, the most player-friendly coach maybe ever in the National Football League. And then some of those players weren't happy. So, yeah, I don't know. You kind of get mixed messages here over the last week in the NFL.
Yeah, I do think you do get some of those mixed messages. It is all about the communication and the trust. I think what's interesting is you hear people that are departing from the Seattle Seahawks talk about Pete Carroll's thing getting old. And so even though he is known to have fun and be an upbeat, optimistic guy, kind of college Pete, rah-rah Pete, I think – for everybody.
Same stories, right?
Same
stories over and over again. They've heard them all.
Yeah, same story. They've heard them all. And at the end of the day, what it comes down to is a lack of trust. Right now, that old guard of Seattle Seahawks weren't trusting Pete, and it didn't become from his message getting old. He made a decision to pass the ball down at the goal line in that Super Bowl. It was intercepted. Malcolm Butler made a terrific play. Instead of handing the ball off to Marshawn Lynch and staying true to what the Seattle Seahawks had always been as a run-first team, he never recovered from that. And I think some of the stuff that we're hearing on Bill Belichick stems from the fact that he benched Malcolm Butler. He didn't necessarily disclose the information to the team. You have guys wondering why their best player, arguably their best cornerback, was on the sideline in the biggest game of the year. They don't win. Well, some of that falls back on the head coach. And so until he's able to kind of patch up some of those relationships, because the team trusted him, they trusted the coach is going to make the right decision to give them the best chance to win, it is hard for teams to bounce back with that. So there's a lot of repairing that has to be done in New England, in my estimation, for them to be the team that they've always been the last decade and a half.
Well, I'll see if you track with me on this, because this is kind of my – I'm just thinking about this whole thing and trying to connect these two teams and two styles, because to me you have the Patriots where it's uptight and very, very constricted. You have the Seahawks where it's very loose and laid back. And if I'm kind of reading into this, I think one of the genius moves of Bill Belichick is you look at the turnover they have with their roster, constantly changing parts. Now, Tom Brady has stayed, as we all know, but everything else around him constantly evolving, constantly changing. Doesn't matter if guys at the early, middle, later portion of their career, he's constantly turning that roster. And I think it's, look, if things are really, really tight, you can only do that for a certain amount of time before you got to get some new people in there. They're going to be, you know, okay with functioning in that capacity. And then on the other, total other end of the spectrum, if it's too loose, I think Pete Carroll, when you look what they've done in this offseason, he's decided, hey, it's gotten stale. We do need to turn this thing over a little bit. Let's get some new blood in here. I just don't know if either way of doing business is the long-term way with the same people. I think there is something to the fact of keeping that door open a little bit and keeping some guys in and out.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's part of the appeal of what you have to do. If you know you run a tight ship, if you know that it's all about fun, like Pete Carroll's, this thing is more like a college field. You talk about those same old stories, the whooping and hollering and all that. Well, you probably have a 4 or 5 year expiration date on when you have to kind of cycle over your roster to make sure that you got new guys hearing that message for the first time. So it's a new message to them, even though it's the same old message for everyone else in the locker room. In New England, it's the same thing. You can grind on people, keep them on a short leash and do all that, but it's tough to have a long tenure with players who necessarily do that. And so I think the constant turnover is by design, because it does keep, one, everyone on edge, but it also keeps new people in the locker room hearing the message for the first time.
I think it does. It brings a little bit of energy there as well. One of the things that I'm learning in this book that I'm reading, Buck, it talks about how kind of have that, you know, have that standard in any industry. Could be in professional sports, could be in business. And everybody's going to be gunning for you. We always talk about being a copycat league, and you're at the top of the mountain. Everybody is spending their off season studying you, trying to steal from you, and then trying to stop you.
Yeah.
So to me, I think one of the interesting things about some of the changes you see with the Seattle football team, what you see with the New England Patriots team, is if you're in the AFC, and if you're especially in that AFC East, the Patriots dominate that division yet again. You spend that off season trying to study them, and how do we stop them, and what do we do? But now they have so many moving parts. You have so many guys in that weren't in there before. You have guys exiting. So it makes it a little more difficult to plan and to strategize around trying to catch those guys, which gets me to this next topic I want to do here. I want to go through the division winners from last year and go through how their rosters have changed from last year to this year. And after we do that, we can come back and say, you know, give us your opinion. I'll give you mine about whether we think this team is better or worse than they were last year. What do you think?
Cool. Let's do it.
All right, let's start here. Let's start in the NFC. Start with the team that won the whole thing there, the Philadelphia Eagles. And I think when you look at what they brought in, you know, we get to the draft in a second. You can touch on that as well. But to me, the big deal was up front. When you bring in a Bennett to come in there in the front line to be able to get after the quarterback, to add what they already have. You bring in a Nada, try and get maybe another year or two out of him if you can at the bottom of his career. And you look at what they've lost. You lose LeGarrette Blount. You lose Trey Burton, who got some big money. They just cut Kendricks, a very talented linebacker. So there has been some roster turnover there. I'd be anxious to see what you think about the changes that they've made and whether or not you think this team is better or worse.
I think this team is better. And I think it's crazy to say that about a team that just won the Super Bowl. But I think they're better because Michael Bennett gives them some versatility up front, some more flexibility, gives them another weapon to deploy on a deep and talented front line. And even though they had to lose a couple of guys in free agency, I think it actually helped them. And then Haloti Ngata coming over. Big body, and even though he's not the Haloti Ngata that at his prime was arguably one of the best, if not the best defensive player in football, he's another big, talented, versatile player on that line. And then I'm going to throw in a bonus guy because I think when you get Carson Wentz back, because you lost him the last part of the year, you're talking about being able to upgrade your team on both sides of the ball. I believe we're going to see a better Eagles team, but I don't know if the record will reflect it because they're playing a much difficult, a much tougher schedule.
Yeah, no question. And Jason Peters coming back off injury. Darren Sproles coming back off injury. So they're getting some key players back. I think Sidney Jones, this will basically be his rookie year after he had to miss some time, almost a whole year last year coming off that Achilles injury from his pro day. So I agree with you. I think this Eagles team will be better. We'll see what the record looks like. I think, though, they have made some significant moves. Mike Wallace, also a name to keep an eye on there. You know, we didn't mention the guys in the draft, Dallas Goedert. Yep. We'll see how he plugs in. But Mike Wallace, another one, kind of giving that deep threat to offset losing Torrey Smith to the Panthers. All right, when you look at this Vikings team, Buck, and what they did in the offseason, look at what they brought in and what they lost. What are your thoughts here?
You know, it's tough because right now this is a push for me. And the reason it's a push, look, Kirk Cousins coming over, Sheldon Richardson coming over, those are certainly upgrades over what they had at the position. The trick is, they lost a talented play caller in Pat Shurmur. And even though Flip will come over and take over the offense, man, Pat Shurmur, the way he designed that offense last year, the way he elevated the player Case Keenum, even Jerick McKinnon stepping in for Dalvin Cook, a lot of it is due to the play caller putting these guys in the right position. I just don't know if John DeFilippino can do that. I don't know if Flip can come over and handle the offense like that. So right now I'm going to say it's a push. Maybe more talent, but we have to see what the play caller can do with the talent to see if he can elevate the squad and get them over the hump.
Yeah, that was a great relationship last year. You touched on it there with Case Keenum and then Pat Shurmur. So you had a quarterback and a play caller absolutely on the same page, able to accentuate his strengths, being able to kind of hide some of his deficiencies. So we'll see. DeFilippo, can he take Kirk Cousins' game to the next level? I think this will be the best group that Kirk Cousins has had around him. You look at the whole team perspective, yes. A run game, a defense as well. So we'll see. Can they take their game to the next level? I think I'm with you. I think I'll say, you know, you said push. I think I'll lean towards being a little bit better personnel-wise. I think a lot of it's though going to come down to coaching and what they get there with Flip. So we'll put them as push. So we've got Eagles up. We've got the Vikings as a push. Now let's get to the Saints. And this is a team not a lot of changes when you look at this offseason for the Saints. You bring over DeMario Davis, I think it's an underrated linebacker. They trade up, much talked about trade in the draft to get up to get Marcus Davenport. And when you look at their losses, you know, I don't see a lot of losses on this football team that they're going to be struggling to replace here. I think this is pretty much a status quo. You got Drew Brees another year older, but for the most part, this is going to be the same team we saw last year, Buck.
Yeah, pretty much the same team, but you would think they would get better because another year to mature. They were able to do it with so many rookies playing in key spots. Talk about one of the historic all-time draft classes with the production they were able to get out of their first-year players. You would think that they would be better. So, yeah, I'm going to say this should be a better team with DeMario Davis and Marcus Davenport coming over because it gives them a complimentary pass rusher to go opposite Cam Jordan. Davis gives them a solid, rough inside linebacker. I mean, this should be a better Saints squad. I'm really the bank on those guys continuing to make progress and continue to play at dominant levels, Marshawn Lattimore and Alvin Kamara in particular.
Yeah, I mean, to me, the only question would be, can Drew continue to play at the level he's played at? I mean, age doesn't seem to bother him. He's been very consistent. So as long as Drew continues to keep rolling like he has throughout his entire career, I think this will be a better football team. You mentioned it, that youth, especially on the defensive side of the ball, when you look at all the guys, the rookies they had in there, when you look at a Marshawn Lattimore being a rookie of the year, he can still take his play to another level. Marcus Williams obviously didn't end the season the way he wanted to back there at safety, but had a great year. Get healthy at the linebacker position. We had some injuries last year. Anzalone, can he stay healthy? Another young emerging player. So a lot of good young pieces there, as well as a real superstar up front, Cam Jordan. So I think this team does get, I would say, just a tiny bit better, Buck. But really, when you look at where they finished up the season, that's all they need.
That is all they needed. I mean, shoot, you really should say this is a team that made it to the NFC Championship game, if not for a bad play on a weird play at the end of the game. The Saints were right there. So I think this team is better. I think they're positioned better. But also, as we talk about with the other teams, playing a tougher schedule in a division that should be much tougher, we'll see if they're able to stave it off, even though we expect better play and performance from their young guys.
All right, a lot of people have labeled this next team the king of the offseason, especially the pre-draft portion of the offseason, Buck. The Rams, what did you see from the Rams in terms of what they added, what they lost, and is this team better or worse?
Oh, I think they're better. I think this is like a Madden All-Star team, all the guys that they brought over in the offseason. Ndamukong Suh, Marcus Peters, Aqib Talib, Brandon Cooks. You talk about four guys who have legitimate Pro Bowl potential. The only one of those guys who hasn't earned Pro Bowl honors has been Brandon Cooks, and I think in this offense he certainly can make it. The thing about the Rams, it seems like they are all in. This is a one-year run, but I like the way that they assembled the squad. Peters and Talib give them a 1-2 punch at cornerback. Those guys can lock up, they can press, they can play off, they can make plays on the ball. Sue beside Donald, look, I know people are going to beat Sue up because he made a lot of money in Miami and he didn't appear to give them production. When you watch the tape, he's still a force on the inside. You put him with a guy that's going to command a double team in Aaron Donald, he could go back to being the force that we saw when he was in Detroit. And then Brandon Cooks, maybe miscast in that Patriots offense. I say that even knowing that he had 1,000 yards in this offense. Sean McVay would dial up some winners. If he can create some winning opportunities for Sammy Watkins, I know he can do the same for Brandon Cooks. I like all the upgrades. I think it really comes down to how are they able to manage and build the chemistry in the locker room? A lot of volatile personalities, but all these guys are going in the right direction. You can't dispute the talent that they have on their roster.
Well, here's my question. We talk about all the players. You mentioned all those guys coming in. You mentioned there's a lot of guys leaving, too. A lot of change over there. Sammy Watkins, Robert Quinn, Jermaine Johnson. They're all gone. I think Alec Ogletree could be kind of the one that people don't talk about that they could end up missing there. But we can talk all about these players coming and going. I want to ask you this, though, Buck. If you look at around the league with the man who calls the plays on both sides of the ball, so it's a tag team match between all 32 teams with your offensive coordinator, your defensive coordinator, are you going to take anybody over the Rams in terms of Wade Phillips and Sean McVay in terms of what they have play calling on both sides of the ball, combination of the two?
Wow. That's interesting. That's fascinating.
I mean, Josh McDaniels, you know, you got, if you want to say Bill Belichick still kind of technically run that defense.
Maybe.
It's his defense that's set up there.
Man, that's a great one. I don't know if you can find a better combination in terms of play caller. Gosh, McVay and Phillips may be the best two. I'm really racking my brain. I'm trying to think. Because it's hard to find an elite guy at both spots. Like Sean,
that's what I'm saying, man.
Like Sean Payton is an elite offensive play caller, but I don't know if Dennis Allen necessarily fits that. Ooh, you might be right on that one. DJ, you might be
right.
That's why
I think we can talk about the players till we're blue in the face. I think they have – who was it? Was it Charlie Weiss? Remember when he said – when he went to Florida? When he said we'll have a schematic advantage over every team we played and everybody mocked him and made fun of him? I really think you can make a case they kind of do have a schematic advantage over every team they play there with the Rams.
Oh, I think you absolutely can make that case. What the Rams have is really, really special because in Wade Phillips, you have a guy that's really like a head coach who is a terrific play caller, terrific play designer, does a great job of creating opportunities for his guys to get home on pass rushes. So that leads to turnovers. And then in Sean McVay, I don't know if you can find a better guy at taking a young quarterback and putting him in a position to succeed while also putting his best players in favorable matchups on the perimeter. You might be right. Sean McVay, Wade Phillips, I don't know if you have a better play-calling combination at offensive coordinator and DC.
All right, let's get to the Patriots here. We flip over to the AFC. A lot of changes, as we mentioned at the top of the show. Danny Shelton comes in. Jeremy Hill, kind of under-the-radar addition there. You look at Matthews coming over to be kind of that big slot receiver for him. It's going to be a different-looking slot receiver after they lose in Amendola. Obviously, you get Edelman back healthy. That'll be huge. And then you look at what they lost. You lose a Deion Lewis, you lose a Brandon Cooks, a Danny Amendola. They lose a Malcolm Butler. A lot of pieces left, a lot of new additions here, a lot of change here with the Patriots. So when you look at it, your thoughts on the changes that were made and whether or not that you think this team is better or worse here.
Man, this is a tough one. It's a tough one because they do such a great job of deploying their players. I am going to say that maybe they take a little bit of a step back. And the reason I'm going to say they take a step back, look, Brandon Cooks was a good player for them. Danny Amendola was playoff clutch for them whenever he showed up. Deion Lewis was a terrific find for them. I like what they're bringing over. I'm a big fan of Sony Michel. Some of the other guys are okay. They do a great job of finding a way to enhance it. But, man, you're talking about losing some core guys, some guys that contributed for a long time.
I mentioned Solder, right? You're going to swap out Isaiah
Solder. You know, like you have that, you have Malcolm Butler. Man, I don't know. I think they take a step back. I think they still win and do what they normally do in the AFC East, but I don't think this is the same team. I know they have maybe six or seven first-rounders, former first-rounders that have come over. I think they step back a little bit. I think they take a bit of a step back. They're still going to win because TB12 is in the building, but I don't think this is still nearly as talented a team as the one that we just saw in the Super Bowl.
All right, no money on the line here, but if I was going to put it at 11.5 for wins for this team, you're going to go higher or lower?
Oh, I go higher because they have Tom Brady. Tom Brady gives them the chance. As long as Tom Brady's there, it doesn't matter. I don't just Tom Brady and all of us, I think we win 12 games. So that's the thing. When you have an elite quarterback like Tom Brady, I think it affords you the opportunity to maybe mess and gamble in terms of your roster building, the way you compose your roster. But, yeah, he makes it right.
All right, let's get to what I think is the AFC version of what we talked about, the Saints, with very little turnover in the roster. And that, to me, is the Steelers. You bring over John Bostic. You draft a Terrell Edmonds in the first round. You lose a tackle in Hubbard. You know, some secondary pieces, Mike Mitchell. But overall, I think for the most part, this Steelers team that we saw last year comes back this year, Buck. Very little change here in the offseason with this team. To me, this is that line that's just flat. I think what you saw last year is what you're going to get this year.
I agree. I don't think it changes much at all. I know they bring over Bostic. They signed Edmonds or drafted Edmonds. Those guys would appear to be upgrades based on who played at the very, very end of the season. But the Steelers are talented. They're always going to be talented. They have three offensive guys that you can hang your hat on, Big Ben, Le'Veon Bell, and Antonio Bryant. So, for me, they can always score. It's about their defense being better. And I think they still have enough pieces to be solid on defense. I think the Pittsburgh Steelers are just a little bit better, not much.
Okay. I'm going flat line. You're giving them the smallest uptick.
Just a little uptick. Just a little uptick.
You're like a size 6 font on that arrow pointing up. How about the Jags? This is a team, when you look at what they did in the offseason, very busy. Again, a lot of guys coming, a lot of guys going.
Oh, man, you talk about Noel coming over, ASJ, Austin Safarian Jenkins, Dante Moncrief. I think this is a team that got better, even though you lose Allen Robinson, who's a Pro Bowl player, guy coming off an injury. Allen Hurns hadn't played at the same level that he played at very early in his career. And then Paul Posluszny, he retires. I think this is still a better team because not only on defense, like with Paz going out, I think they get to put some of their guys more in their natural position. But Noel, Jenkins, and even Moncrief, I think they help this team. This is a team that won without a true number one receiver, but their ability to run the ball. Noel helps it. ASJ helps it. I think they still fortify their strength. I believe the Jags are better, which is scary for the rest of the league.
I think they're much better. I mean, when you look at how good they were last year, and some of that's playing the lower tier schedule, that's going to step up in competition this year. But, man, you look at that offensive line, another year together, a lot of young players there. Now you bring in an Orwell, who's a good interior offensive lineman, add him to the mix. Austin Seferian Jenkins, who we saw, is still a young guy, Buck, played great for the Jets last year. And I think at the receiver position, you have all these guys emerging. You re-sign a Marquise Lee. You've got a lot of young players that you like there. Dede Westbrook, friend of the program, being in that mix as well. You add a Moncrief, who's kind of a high-ceiling player. We'll see what they get out of that. But I don't look at what they lost. I don't think that they're really down at any position. I think you can make a case this team is much better position than even they were last year. Again, maybe the win-loss record doesn't reflect that at the end of the year because the schedule is a little more challenging. But, man, I think this is a good football team that got better in the offseason.
Absolutely got better. You got to commend them. The Jaguars are always looking to take it to the next level. They certainly have the pieces. And what I like about it, when they made the commitment to keep Blake Bortles and they decided to pay him, they're trying to make sure that everything around him is solid. Big body tight end, solid offensive line. They have the running game taken care of with Leonard Fournette and others. This team is a lights-out team. This team is a title contender. They have to see if they can put it together in a division that will be increasingly tougher next season with Deshaun Watson and Andrew Luck coming back.
All right, let's get to the last team here. That is the AFC West. Kansas City Chiefs have owned this division. You bring over a Sammy Watkins. You bring over a Hitchens, a very talented linebacker there. From the Cowboys. You bring over Fuller, one of the best nickel corners in the league. But then you look at what they lost. You lose Alex Smith, your stabilizing force at quarterback. Marcus Peters, arguably the best cornerback in the league and a leader there for this defense, and Derek Johnson. So a lot of changes there. The biggest one, I think we've talked about it before, is the first ballot Hall of Famer, Patrick Mahomes, taking over for Alex Smith.
Man, I don't think this team is necessarily better because I think it hinges on the quarterback. I'm going to say that Pat Mahomes may be more talented than Alex Smith. Alex Smith is a better quarterback. And I think some of these growing pains that Mahomes will ultimately go through will lead to some turnovers that ultimately cost the Kansas City Chiefs games. Sammy Watkins is a nice find. He gives them an explosive playmaker. Kendall Fuller coming over is nice. But it comes down to Pat Mahomes. And right now, I believe they let a great quarterback, a really, really good quarterback in Alex Smith, walk out the building for Pat Mahomes. We'll see if Pat Mahomes can do half the stuff that Alex Smith has been able to do in his five seasons in Kansas City.
So I'm going arrow down. You're with me then on that then?
Yeah, I'm going to go arrow down. I agree.
All right. So now we can kind of summarize this thing based off of teams we felt that either stayed the same or teams that aren't going to be as good as they were last year. So this will help us kind of identify who we think the vulnerable teams are in this division. So the taking this to the next level, Buck, as I give you the teams we think are vulnerable, and all it is one, two, three, four. So we've got four teams, four of the eight divisions we feel like are vulnerable because the team at the top either stayed the same or got worse. So now I need you to give me the team that's the biggest threat to them to overtake them in the division. You ready for this challenge?
All right, here we go.
All right, the Vikings, we said, is a flat line from what they were last year. This is a 13-win team, so the bar is set very high. We don't feel like they got better. We don't feel like they got worse. We feel like this is kind of a plateau here. So who could conceivably catch them in that division there in the NFC North?
There's only one team. It's Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers. Aaron Rodgers can single-handedly lift his team to higher heights. They have completely blown up the coaching staff. They bring Joe Philbin back to be the offensive coordinator. They're trying to streamline and get back to what the original foundation of the offense was. I believe you can see Aaron Rodgers play at an MVP level. And that defense, we'll see if Mike Pettine is able to do all the things that he wants to do, but I think he is going to be a little more aggressive. And with that aggression could mean more turnovers. More turnovers mean more opportunities for Aaron Rodgers to put the ball in the paint. The Green Bay Packers are the team that will challenge the Minnesota Vikings.
young secondary, all those draft picks that they devoted here over the last couple of years, especially this year, you think they can get up to speed early enough for them to win this division?
Well, I think they can get up to speed because they're going to be playing with the lead. The one thing, that one advantage that you have when you play with an MVP-level quarterback, you know that you're going to put up 28 points a game. Aaron Rodgers is going to come out. You can put 28 points on the board. So now, defensively, you're playing for a couple stops and turnovers. And I think their young secondary will learn how to create those turnover opportunities. I think they take advantage of it. Yeah, I like the Green Bay Packers bouncing back off the mat.
All right, next one, I'm going to ask you to answer a question that you're not going to believe in, because we've said even though this team's taken a step back, how do you pick against the Patriots? But if you had to identify one team that can give them a run here in this AFC East, who is it?
Ooh, the one team that can give them a run. You know, call me crazy. Call me crazy because there are not a lot of offensive weapons on this team, but this team has played better. They play hard. I'm going to go with the New York Jets. I think the New York Jets will give them an opportunity to close the gap. Defensively, I am all in. Jamal Adams and company, they're beginning to play lights out. I see Todd Bowles, I see his imprint on that defense. Offensively, it's about how can they manage and manufacture points. Don't see a lot of weapons, but look, this is a team that kind of snuck up on people. I think this defense has a chance to be a top five-ish defense when they get it together. I believe that defense is going to give them a chance. I'm not believing in Miami. I don't think Buffalo can do it. I think Buffalo takes a step back. The New York Jets are the team that will be the surprise number two team in this division.
A couple things I've heard, just out there about the Jets and how they've looked so far. First of all, Teddy Bridgewater has been awesome.
Yep.
So, I mean, Teddy Bridgewater, we think about – I've been on record as saying I thought Sam Darnold would come out there and start week one just because, you know, with Josh McCown, I know Josh played great, but you know exactly what you have there. He's not the future. Sam Darnold is the future. So I thought, okay, that makes sense. Just throw Sam Darnold out there. But I didn't take into account the Teddy factor. And Teddy, when I look at the grades, but coming out, very similar to me with Darnold. So I don't think there's a huge talent gap between the two of them.
No.
And if Teddy can stay healthy, we've seen when he stays healthy, two things. He's accurate. He makes good decisions. And you've got a good young defense now with some nice pieces in place. And Sam Darnold's 20 years old. I mean, Teddy could take the reins here for the next year, 2 years, and Sam Darnold starting as a 21, 22-year-old with, you know, a chance to have 14, 15-year career. So don't rush it with Sam Darnold. If Teddy can take this thing over, I think this team could be sneaky competitive. And the other things I've heard about coming out of their camp is this team's faster, and this team's got a lot of energy. It's kind of getting a little bit of an identity here with some of those young pieces on defense especially.
No, don't underestimate the fact that they have a bunch of winners that they've drafted of late. You think about Jamal Adams, Marcus May coming from winning programs. You think about Teddy Bridgewater being a winner throughout his time at Louisville. Even Sam Darnold being a winner at SC. I think that attitude that winning is contagious, and as you're trying to rebuild the culture in the locker room, it helps to have guys who have had success. I believe this is a team that is going to be okay. Even though I can't name any of the stars on offense, I just believe the collective unit is going to be much better, and I think that's going to put them in a position to win 9 games this year.
I'm going to give you the name to remember here. For your fantasy football drafts early, just log this one down. Write it down here. Chad Hansen, second-year receiver out of Cal. We had him on the pod.
Big-time athlete,
Him coming out. Year two. Keep an eye on some of these year two wide receivers. It's kind of a theme for me in this offseason, but he's one I keep an eye on there with the Jets. Now we get to the AFC North. We have the Steelers as kind of flatlined. We don't think they got better or worse. They're going to be the same as last year. So who's the challenge to them in this division?
This is tough. This is tough because I have two, and I think the usual suspects, Cincinnati Bengals, are always in the mix. I'm going to go with the Cincinnati Bengals in this, and the reason I'm going to go with the Cincinnati Bengals, I believe, look, they took a step back last year, but at the end of the year, they were playing very, very hard for Marvin Lewis. Marvin Lewis has decided to retain his offensive coordinator that was the interim in Bill Lazor. I think Lazor's going to skinny up that offense, make it more Andy Dalton friendly. I think we'll see Andy Dalton play maybe his best football that we've seen since Hugh Jackson departed. Also, the weapons that they have in terms of the playmakers, I think back-to-back years, they got some blue-collar guys, some blue-chip players outside of the first round. I think the Cincinnati Bengals will make a run at the AFC North title.
Yeah, you hinted at the other team there with the Ravens. I'll go with the Ravens over the Bengals in this one. I think the Ravens, with what they have, especially in their secondary, if they stay healthy in the back end, they're going to be able to be ultra-aggressive with their front and attack and blitz and get after people.
What about your quarterback, though? What about the quarterback? Your quarterback.
Well, we'll see. I mean, I'm out there. I've said I think this is a competition. I don't think it's a foregone conclusion. This is Joe Flacco's year. Everybody's kind of labeled this as the redshirt year for Lamar Jackson. I think there's a lot of pressure on Joe Flacco in this preseason, which sounds crazy for a guy who's won a Super Bowl to have that much pressure on him in the preseason. But if Lamar Jackson lights it up and you can add his legs to the mix on offense, be able to run the ball, play great defense, that's the formula that worked for the Ravens when they won their first Super Bowl. Not the second one where Joe Flacco got hot, but I think they go back in time here. I think we will see Lamar Jackson before it's said and done this season, and I think they're a legitimate threat there to the Steelers. Always going to be a real competitive division and competitive games, especially between those two franchises, Buck. Last one here, the Chiefs. We have them with the arrow pointing down a little bit, primarily because there's an adjustment period there when you go from an experienced veteran in Alex Smith to a young quarterback in Patrick Mahomes. I think I know where you're going to go on this because it's a team we've been kind of beating the drum for a while now. But who do you see as a threat to the Chiefs?
I think this is going to pain you terribly. It's going to pain you terribly that you're going to see your hometown team win a division title up in L.A. I think it's going to drive you crazy that the former San Diego Chargers are going to win the AFC West as the L.A. Chargers. And all of L.A. is going to adopt it. You can see the little bolts and all that running all over town. It's going to drive you crazy when you come into work. But, yeah. The Chargers are the team to beat. The Chargers are going to be legitimate title contenders, and even though they lose Hunter Henry and OTAs very, very early, I think this is the year that we have a great appreciation for Phillip Rivers and all that he's done. I think this is the team that allows them to play the way that we've expected them to play for the last few years.
Yeah, look, it's not going to hurt my feelings any, Buck. I grew up in San Diego. I work in Los Angeles. I live in Riverside, so I've got a wide area here to claim a home team. But look, I think the Chargers, we've been talking about it. When you look at their roster, how loaded they are, I hate the injury to Hunter Henry. But the pieces in the secondary, I talked about the secondary, about the Ravens. How about this secondary with the Chargers if Jason Verrett can stay healthy? Casey Hayward with what he's done. You bring in a Derwin James, add him to the mix. This is a really, really good-looking group back there. Behind a ferocious pass rush, you've got an elite quarterback. There's a lot to like. I think this is the best receiving core that Phillip Rivers has had around him in quite some time. I think not only are they a legitimate threat, Buck, I think they're the favorite. You know, Elway put it out there. I agree with him. I think the Chargers are the favorite in this division as we head towards camp.
Yeah, I absolutely believe it. I believe they feel like they are ready to be there. I think the infusion of attitude and aggressiveness that they've added the last couple of years, I think Joey Bosa obviously has helped them. He's a dominant player. Derwin James is going to add a little more bite to that defense. Their defense is loaded. We rarely talk about their defense. And then offensively, a healthy Keenan Allen to go with Phillip Rivers, and if Melvin Gordon can continue to play at a high level, I think that offense is going to be ready to go. This is a team that found their way under Anthony Lynn. I think they continue to build upon the momentum they created at the end of the season.
I'm with you. Well, there you go. That's our looking at the top of the division sequence there. Before we get out of here, Buck, I want to go back to – we started the NBA at the top, talking about that crazy mess with the 76ers. I want to finish up with kind of an NBA thought here, and that is you need star players to win championships in the NBA, but you also got to have some key role players. So let's look at the NFL, and just give me one name. I only need one name from you. Just maybe your favorite role player, somebody that serves a very specific role for a football team that can help you win a championship. Who you got?
LeGarrette Blount for the Detroit Lions. LeGarrette Blount is going to play a critical role for the Detroit Lions because he gives them something that they haven't had, a legitimate ground presence. You talk about a team that has really struggled finding guys behind Matthew Stafford that can legitimately grind it out. And I'm not saying that he's going to be a 1,000-yard rusher, but in these games where we've seen Detroit need to salt it away, need to be able to get into a four-minute offense, they've been unable to do so. Well, LeGarrette Blount is the ultimate hammer. Big, physical, a whammer between the tackles. He is going to give them the opportunity to grind out these close games at the end of games. I think he's going to do it. I think he's going to play a key role. Look for the Detroit Lions to win a number of games because LeGarrette Blount is able to salt games away as the four-minute back.
Well, I like the fact that you went running back, and I like the fact you went with somebody that was on the Eagles last year because I'm going to do both here. I'm going to go with somebody that was on the Eagles last year, plays a running back position, but he's coming back this year, and that's Darren Sproles coming off of injury. Darren Sproles, I think, has been one of the best role players in the NFL for a long period of time. Here he is in the middle of his 30s, and still, when he's out there and healthy, getting it done. And, Buck, I saw him working out the other day at the facility I was at and watched him train. He is in phenomenal shape. I think he's going to come back and have a big role here for this Eagles team. Not only can get you on third down screens, draws, get him out in space, but what he gives you in the punt return game as well is such an added bonus. That's a valuable role for a football team. So the Eagles are going to miss LeGarrette Blount, no question. They've still got some power there. When you look at Jay Ajayi, you still got Corey Clement who can run and catch the ball out of the backfield, do some different things. But Darren Sproles, kind of the forgotten man for this Eagles team. Keep an eye on him, one of my favorite role players in the entire league.
I mean, he's a terrific player. You have people that are out there hunting for the next Darren Sproles to add to their team. Darren Sproles is such a unique playmaker, a guy that can do it not only in the return game, but also as the specialist coming out of the backfield, whether it's catching the ball out the backfield, doing it on screens, draws, delays, misdirection plays. He is a handful. He is someone that you have to account for in every down. Whenever he's in the game, you have to pay attention. And so, yeah, I think it's going to be a situation where he is going to impact that offense. And an offense that found its way down the playoffs, Darren Sproles is another weapon that you have to worry about.
No question. Hey, that's a pretty jam-packed show for us today, Buck. Anything else you want to add? What are you working on? Anything you want to promote here?
You know, the one thing that I'm working on is Dak Prescott last week kind of flew under the radar. He said that, look, he felt like he can get away that teams don't need a number one receiver. And so I decided to call around, dig around, look at a little tape and see, do you need a number one receiver to really be a championship caliber offense? We'll see what I can turn up with.
All right, we can keep an eye on that. NFL.com/BuckyBrooks.
Yeah, NFL.com. Yeah, it's coming on Thursday night, Friday, so the post-Friday. But, yeah, we're looking to see, do you really need a legitimate number one receiver to have a championship-caliber offense? I believe the better the quarterback, the lesser the need. You have a Brady, a Breeze, a Rodgers. You don't necessarily need a number one because they elevate the play of the guys around them.
Well, yeah, that's my question, just kind of listening to you talk about here. Okay. Yeah, you don't if you're one of those big-time guys. Now, the question is Dak in that really, really good emerging group, or is he in that big-time group? Because
we're going to find out.
If I'm kind of in that middle ground, I think I kind of want to have a big-time receiver to throw to.
Yeah, I think we're going to find out. We're going to find out really quickly if he's a legitimate dude. I know he's had a ton. Like 50% of his games, he's had a passer rating over 100. But now you remove Witten, you remove Dez Bryant, you don't have a marquee name. Can he sustain it? Can he sustain that level of play? I think he will benefit from the fact that Ezekiel Elliott is always in the backfield. Ezekiel Elliott would change the numbers in coverage, and that could allow him to maybe get away with some pedestrian guys on the outside.
I hear you. Well, I'm looking forward to reading that. Again, NFL.com/BuckyBrooks. You can check that out. If you haven't already, be sure to subscribe to the podcast here. Don't just download one. Just subscribe. It'll drop in there for you each and every time we have one released. It'll be waiting for you when you get in your car or go to work out, wherever you listen to your podcast. And if you haven't already, we've had a bunch of reviews. I think we're closing in on a big number. I think we're closing in on 1,000 maybe. On 1,000 of those reviews on Apple Podcasts. So if you haven't done that already, do us a solid there. Leave us a review. You can write a little write-up on there as well. We're closing in on episode number 300. Boys, 300 for the Move the Sticks podcast. How fast is that?
Crazy, crazy, crazy.
Oh, it's ridiculous. But we've got another one coming up here. Be on the lookout. We're going to hit you a little back-to-back podcast here. So as you're finishing this one, there'll be another one coming your day within 24 hours. So be on the lookout for that. Sully, thank you for the producing today. Buck,
yes, sir.
Good to see you. And we'll get back together and get some college in the mix. We'll get our little truth or troll going, and we're going to talk some virtual reality and scouting, how that all could work together. Going to have some fun here on the next podcast. So thank you so much for listening. This is Move the Sticks. He's Bucky Brooks. I'm Daniel Jeremiah, and we'll catch you next time.
Thanks for downloading Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks. For more, go to NFL.com/podcasts.